We are talking all about newborns again in part two. In the second half of this exciting topic, Dr. Morgan guides us through everything we need to know about newborn skin, crying and what to do about it, diapering and pooping things, and baby first aid. This is the second part to part one, so if you haven't listened to that one, definitely do so before or after this one. As always, Dr. Morgan is a wealth of knowledge and wisdom, and I am selfishly so happy to have this as a resource for when my new baby is born. Let's get started. Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
There is a lot of education out there for pregnancy and birth, and thank goodness for it. But what about postpartum? Many parents feel blindsided by how dynamic and intense the first few weeks with a newborn can be, and I've created a course to change that. Introducing the Immediate Postpartum Series. In this 11-video course, I teach you and your partner about all of the different types of decisions that need to be made right after your baby is born, the ways that your body and your baby's body will be changing rapidly over those first several days and weeks, how to recover from birth, whether it's a vaginal or cesarean delivery, how to establish breastfeeding, it's basically a breastfeeding 101 course, and the nuances of stool changes, diaper tricks, newborn sleep, placenta options, mindset, circumcision, and more, so that you and your partner know what to expect and can feel prepared and confident in what is normal and what is not, and get back to enjoying your new baby. Click the link in the show notes to start prepping now.
All right, we are back for part two of All About Newborns, and I selfishly requested these episodes. We did part one previously, and now we're going to finish up talking about everything that has to do with having a newborn, because whether you're a first-time mom or you're a subsequent mom like me, you forget, and there's so much to know, and Dr. Morgan knows everything about it. So we are going to jump in this time about talking about skin stuff and crying and five S's and diaper stuff and baby first aid and all of these other things. Last time we talked a lot about sleep and feeding and, you know, immediate considerations right after the baby's born. So definitely check out that episode if you haven't. But let's just hop right in, Dr. Morgan, and tell us all the things.
Okay, so I do want to just make a quick note, because last time we talked a lot about some of the nuances and intersections between newborn sleep and feeding. And what I was mentioning was, you know, you need to feed every 2 hours until they regain birth weight, which is true. And that first night of life, though, is an exception. And so this is important, because that first night of life, when a baby is brand new and you are an extremely tired mom who just had a baby, this one particular first night, you can sleep. You can have the baby sleep longer. This is the only time that this can happen, really. And typically, not all the time, but typically, newborns will give you one longer stretch that first night after they've been born. Or at some point in that first 24 hours. It may not actually be at night, because they may not know that it is at night. But at some point, usually, again, not every baby, but it might be a 4-hour stretch. It might be like a 6-hour stretch. It could be a long time. And so it's sort of like a recovery situation. And from what I've heard from numerous lactation consultants through the years, is that this is sort of the one and only pass we get, because it is so beneficial to both mom and baby to be able to have a nice restful sleep situation. And then after that, we're, you know, round the clock feeding until milk has come in, they've regained their birth weight, et cetera, et cetera. So I just had to make that little disclaimer, because I don't think I mentioned that in that part one of that episode.
I don't think you did.
Yeah, and it's important, because...
And when does milk come in? Because I think I don't remember.
Yeah, typically between 3 and 5 days postpartum.
So you're feeding every 2 to 3 hours, but nothing's really coming out. Or a little bit of colostrum. Just a tiny bit, though.
I mean, it's tiny bits in like each time, but it is exactly what that baby is prepared for and expecting. So if you look at charts, you can just Google newborn stomach size, and it'll show you on day 1 of life, day 3 of life, day four of life, five of life, it changes rapidly, but it's literally the smallest, tiniest little thing. So to fill a newborn stomach, it's just a very small amount of colostrum. But this is also why we need to be feeding frequently, because it is processed out quickly and they cannot hold that much in their stomachs. And so You are definitely giving them something, and it's exactly what they want and need, and it is important. And now if for some reason you need to be pumping, say your baby's in the NICU or they're just not latching or something, same thing. You're going to pump every 2 hours and then you would be feeding that baby. Now, feeding colostrum in a bottle is difficult. Usually you're going to be using something like a syringe or an open cup, obviously not with a needle on it, just like a plunger syringe or some sort of like little teeny tiny cup. Newborns can actually drink from open mouth cups, and they're very small though for their mouths. And so there'd be something like that. You can in a bottle, but it's just a specific type of bottle for colostrum usually. So anyway, I just wanted to add that nuance there because it's a blessing and a gift that some babies give their moms, you know, that first night. And you can reap the benefits of that. You can rest and it's okay. I did know this with my first child, but I did not expect it to be 8 hours.
And that's okay.
And it's okay, although that was kind of a long – now, knowing what I know and everything, I think that was a little extreme. I mean, it was a very, very long birth, and he worked very hard, and he was in the canal for 3.5 hours, like, with pushing. And so, you know, he was really tired, and he ended up being just that sort of a constitution. He was fat, you know, 9 pounds, 3 ounces, like, it was okay. Babies are also born fat-adapted, so they are – almost like in a state of ketosis in that sort of a way. So they're used to burning their ketones for energy. And so it is okay. But I mean, it was very alarming for me to wake up 8 hours later, because obviously I didn't, like, first time mom, like, I just had no idea what was going on. And all of a sudden I was like, like, woke up in this panic 8 hours later. Like, I just hit the deck, you know, so exhausted, 36-hour labor. And he was just sleeping peacefully, swaddled, looking like, you know, his like face next to me. He didn't even stir. I woke up, I think, just, and it's not like I had my milk and I was full or anything like that, because my milk hadn't come in yet. I was still just feeding colostrum, which is milk, but it's not the same thing, right? So
so your risk of mastitis is not there if you go that long stretch on the first night.
Yeah,
versus it's not there. If you did that like 10 days in, then your risk of mastitis goes way up.
Yes, absolutely.
And loss of milk supply.
And loss of milk supply. And yeah, baby shouldn't be sleeping 8 hour stretches at that point. Very, very, very rarely would that be the case. But, you know, if your baby is one of these anomalies where they're a really great sleeper right off the bat, and you're kind of like, oh, I don't really know what to think about this or whatever, I would just say consult with a lactation consultant and ensure maybe doing something like some weighted feeds where you weigh the baby, then you feed them, then you weigh them again, you see how much they're getting, can be helpful information, because maybe your baby is like a super chugger and they're getting like 6 ounces or something crazy like that. Not at 10 days, they wouldn't be, but maybe at 10 days they're getting 4 ounces. That's a S load of milk for a 10 day old to be getting at that time. So maybe they are, with their constitution, their temperament, they're a great sleeper and they're an amazing nurser. And so like they have this kind of consistently happening stretch where they're sleeping, but you do need to make sure that they are continuing to gain weight and have some metrics for that, in my opinion, because it can just go downhill really quickly with those new babies. And you really want to be protecting mom's milk supply. I think at 10 days, if that was my baby, I would be pumping in the middle of the night, or I would just be waking them up to feed them, because it's like, what's more, I don't know, it's hard. It's like, what's more important, establishing a good milk supply or like letting a baby sleep? Like it's tricky. It's a gray area. So anyways, I just wanted to add that before we moved on to some skin stuff, because newborn skin, well, first off, do you have any other questions or anything about?
No, I think I'm good. I think I'm ready. I'm glad you told me that. Okay. I now feel completely ready to have a baby.
Okay, good. Wow.
No, I don't. I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't remember any of that. I don't remember any of it. But
it's okay, because I'll be right there with you.
I was in the hospital, like, drugged up on fentanyl with my daughter. So it's like, I don't even know. I don't even know. Well, and I was so upset.
I will say, in the hospital, you will not likely be able to sleep that long of a stretch, because they come in and they check when you
postpartum. You sure can't.
Yeah.
It's the worst thing in the whole world. I mean, honestly, when I think about my motivation to want to have a VBAC, one of the top motivations is to be left alone postpartum.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, they make those funny reels of the people coming
in. Yeah, I posted one.
They like drop the clipboard and it's so loud. And they're like, hey, hi. And they like knock on it. Hey. And it's like, I'm dead asleep. Like,
oh, it was the most infuriating thing ever. I was just like, leave me alone. What value are you possibly getting from this? Nothing. Probably because you can bill. I don't know. I'm just like, leave me alone. But yeah, I know they're trying to do their job and labor and delivery nurses are great.
There is some, you know, post C-section, there is risk of like internal bleeding and different things. So they want to make sure that you're doing okay. And I get it, but it's tricky. So I guess that tip that I just gave, which was let your baby sleep that first night, is going to be of babies born at home or in birth centers where you are at your home that first night usually.
Yeah.
Or maybe if you can work the hospital staff to be like, yo, please, please, can we just either not wake the baby up in between? I don't know. This is just whatever.
Well, they don't even let you sleep with your baby. They want it in a separate little thing. Yeah, and I was like, no,
yes.
I'm not doing that. I don't care. So I was like, I'm not sleeping. I'm just going to hold my baby and stay up all night. That's all they needed to know.
Yes, there you go. Oh my gosh, the nuances of that. And sometimes people can leave day of. They don't even need to spend the day, but that's also really hard to do. I feel like it depends on the time of day that your baby was born, because then you've got to like really get hightailed out of there. And it's sometimes after you've been cleared to leave and you're like, everybody's ready to go, you're just waiting on paperwork and it can take hours. And you're like, oh my, what is going on? You know?
Yeah.
So that is, you know, neither here nor there. That's just hospital nuance, depending on where you are. So anyways, let's talk about newborn skin. So some babies, not all babies, but all babies usually have at least some level of vernix on them when they are born. V-E-R-N-I-X. V-E-R-N-I-X. V-E-R-N-I-X.
No, I'm dancing for those who can't see me.
So vernix is a white creamy substance that is sort of like a lotion.
Oh, I just had an idea.
Oh,
we should become rich and open a club in Las Vegas called Vernix. And it could be like everyone dresses up as like newborn babies.
Wait a minute. Actually, Vernix is a really good club name. For those that don't know what it means, it's like one of those, you know, there's those reels that are about like funny like names that sound like they could be cute names for babies, but they have funny name, like they actually are inappropriate, like Felony. Like Felony is pretty. It's like that could be a pretty name, maybe. But I thought of one the other day. I was like, oh, bidet. Bidet.
Oh my god,
that's funny. No, but Vernix is actually a really great. It has that kind of like edgy. It sounds like there'd be like neon signs everywhere. Like
super smoke. Cool club.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone could just be like covered in like white goo.
Oh, great. That could cause problems, liability. Anyways, okay, so Vernix is a protective coating that is on the baby to – because imagine you are, you know, in a water bath for 9 months and your little poor skin would get so wrinkly and waterlogged just as it does when you take a bath for too long. And so Vernix is this thick, oily, like coated layer that helps prevent that from happening to the baby. So babies that are born earlier often have a ton more vernix, because as the baby gets closer to like 40 weeks and then beyond, it's starting to kind of flake off, and it'll sometimes just be in the amniotic fluid. Sometimes it just kind of dissolves away and you don't even see it in the amniotic fluid. You don't also see it on your baby, or you'll see it in small places like on the inside of their ear, or like in the crevices of their thighs, or like in the inner labia of a little girl or something like that. You know, you'll see little whites like pieces here and there. Mm-hmm. You don't need to remove it. You don't need to do anything to it. You can if you want to, but there's also some benefits to it. If your baby comes out like creamy frosting, like completely covered in it, you'll want to clean some of that up. But you can just sort of rub it into their skin too. So just know that that is a common and normal thing. It is what it is, right? So speaking of that, with bathing, it used to be common practice for babies to be bathed on that first day of life in the hospital, and then like before they even sometimes go to their mom, or maybe they go to their mom for a brief moment, then they're whisked away, newborn exam, bathed and swaddled and hat, and then handed back in this like little pretty package. Mm-hmm. Now we know that that is not the best practice, and that if everything medically is going well with the baby, medically stable baby and medically stable mom, the best place for a newborn baby is going to be on his or her mom's chest and not moved for a very long period of time. And sometimes this is called the golden hour, or it should be golden hours, because it's even the newborn exam can mostly be done on mom's belly or chest. There really should be no separation unless there's something going on that would necessitate that. And bathing is something that like You do not need to bathe your baby. I mean, this is controversial, and I've been lit up about this before on the internet, which I don't care. I don't care. Sure, light me up. It is what it is. But it's just funny because there's different cultural, ideas about this and the way to go about it. And so if it's within your culture, sure, fine. But we do need to understand that physiologically and like biologically, there is a benefit to keeping a baby unbathed for a week or more.
Yeah.
I say 10 days is a great marker to give that first bath. It can be longer though. You're wiping them when they're having a stool. You're keeping their genitals clean and they're not sweating. They're not born dirty. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Hair, sometimes if a baby has a lot of hair or if there was some blood or different things like that, or meconium, I understand if a baby comes out just completely covered in their own poop, head to toe, that we want to have a bath. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But if a baby comes out and there's just a little bit of crusty blood in their hair, you can just wipe that off with a towel. You don't need to be slathering up this newborn baby with soap, because the colonization of that baby, of the bacteria that they are going to receive from coming out of the vaginal canal, or if they are born via C-section, from just being on your chest and being on you skin to skin and nursing, that is a huge inoculation event. Inoculation meaning lots of bacteria transferred into baby. Every time you nurse your baby, they are getting probiotics and all the good bacteria into their mouth that's on your skin, in your milk, etc. Also, we should be really doing as much skin to skin with our kids as possible with our little newborn babies because of this, but also because it helps regulate their nervous system, their respiratory rate, their heart rate, literally everything. Mm-hmm. And when a newborn comes out, this is one of my favorite lessons in my 6-week pregnancy call, is about the like miraculous event of a baby taking their first breath, because when I was researching the physiology of that event, I knew it was going to be cool. I didn't know it was going to be that cool. It is so amazing. I mean, I'm not going to bore you with all the details there because I have like several slides on it in that course, which is a great thing to take if you are, you know, in the trying to conceive period or your first or second trimester pregnant. And I will put the information for the course in the show notes. It only runs 4 times a year though. So depending on when you listen to this, it may or may not be available. You'll have to check out my website, milkmedicine.com. But anyways, the moment of birth, when a baby takes their first breath, there are several physiological processes that occur sort of all at the same time. And then also like dominoes stacking and falling down. So it's like, you know, a cascade of events, like this triggers that, triggers this, triggers that, so that the baby has a good, robust respiratory system kick into place. And one of those things that happens that's so cool is that a hole in the heart, which was part of fetal circulation, which was purposeful for fetal circulation, slams shut forever. It's like a little flap that now goes and it shuts and the blood is shunted around and changes its circulatory pattern forever. And now you have land human circulation. You have like baby
land
human, you know, adult circulation. And it's so amazing. And so even if like, you know, baby is breathing well and everything like that, you can imagine that this does take some time though for the brain to kind of like deeply wire. As a river, you know, cuts the grooves into a side of a mountain, we want our respiratory systems to be deeply cut into the sides of our brain in that kind of a way, like a really good neural network that knows exactly what to do all the time now for the rest of our entire lives, to be breathing and heart beating. And one of the good things that, or one of the things that helps that, is babies being on their mom's chest, because the mirror neurons in their brain are going to mimic and sync to her subconsciously. It just happens. Mothers and babies sync to each other. Well, no, babies sync to mothers. Mm-hmm. And so being around them as much as possible in very close proximity and then literally skin to skin. Also, their temperature regulation is not great. So hospitals will really want to slap a hat on your baby, but here's what we can do instead. And they want to swaddle your baby, but your baby needs to be touching your skin. So if they do that for any reason, you just say, oh, thank you. You lay your baby on your bed. You take the swaddle off. They're just in a diaper, or maybe they're even naked. Who cares? Who cares? Like, it's okay. They're just born. Just slap them on your chest, cuddle and snuggle, and put a blanket on top of the baby then, so that there's a blanket on top of the baby and it's creating this little warm, cozy tent. They will regulate to your body temperature very quickly, and they will be completely fine and content with that. Unless you're outside, you're camping, the hospital is freezing, there's no need for a hat.
Yeah.
You will be warm enough. And yes, you do lose a lot of heat through the head. And again, to a medically stable baby, the heat from mom's chest should be enough. And also, there are important pheromones that are coming and radiating off of the top of the baby's head that inherently smell very good to mom. Or maybe she doesn't perceive them, but there is a benefit there that loops in with oxytocin and bonding. And so anyway, that's kind of like a thing about vernix and bathing. We don't need to bathe the baby. Like, we don't need to do that. It's okay. So also, as babies become more and more gestated, so say it's a 41, 42 week baby, they may come out with no vernix. Again, mm-hmm. your baby does come out with vernix. And at the same time, still, no matter what, most newborns will have peely skin at some point in that first couple weeks of life. And that's partially because of, yeah, now they've come out and they're in the air all the time, and their top layer of skin that was maybe waterlogged is starting to now slough off. Or even if they were covered in vernix, it still can happen. And sometimes people feel like there's something you need to do about it. You need to lotion your baby up all good because, and you can prevent it. It's like, no, 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 it's fine. It's usually their hands mostly, or like their calves and stuff. Just know that that is a process, and don't freak out. They also get very blotchy sometimes, like, and then if their nails are long, they'll scratch themselves and it looks crazy. And you'll be like, oh my God, my baby has this like huge gash on their cheek or something, you know, and because it'll scratch and they're sharp, and then it'll be this very large red mark. Obviously, if your baby's bleeding, you'll need to tend to that. Otherwise, it's like, just know that this is the way that newborn skin can be. With the cord, there's going to be different philosophies out there about the cord. I feel like even just when my son was born, there was a different overarching sort of way that midwives approached cords that is now different. Oh. I'm noticing with like my last couple of babies, it feels different, but it also could just be midwife to midwife. So sometimes they'll tell you, just keep it clean. You don't need to put anything on it. You got to tuck the little top of the diaper down and in though, so it's not rubbing on that cord, like their umbilical, their belly button. Golly, like, what am I trying to say?
I think, don't they call it a stump?
The stump of the cord. And it will be gooey and wet and stuff like that for the first day. And then it'll become this hard little stump, and it's tender. So if it's getting rubbed around by maybe the diaper, or when you're changing their clothes, they can cry, it can hurt them. It can maybe even bleed a little bit. But you may notice that it looks kind of gooey and sticky, like underneath where it's connected still to baby, but then the rest of it, it's hard. And that can be normal. We just need to keep it clean. Cords can smell really, really bad, and it's still within the range of normal. I've had that happen to me one time in particular where I was like, this is the grossest rotted flesh smell ever. Like, what is happening? But it was okay. It was normal. If you think that there's any infection starting, like the skin around the entrance of it is really, really red, or it looks like pus. But again, it can look like a gooey slug. So it's a little bit gray, a little bit green, a little bit yellow, and that can all kind of be normal. So you just need to, I know that I'm not being that clear. But if baby doesn't seem irritated, there's no redness, that can just be sort of like the normal thing. So some people will say just keep it clean and dry. So like, what does keep it clean and dry mean? You could take some Q-tips and just dip them in warm water and gently kind of twist and circle around and get any sort of debris out of there, you know, once a day, once every other day, something like that. My midwife would have me pour a little bit of hydrogen peroxide into a cup of water, then dip the Q-tip in that. So there's just like a teensy bit of a something on there. If I were to have a future baby, now that I know about active skin repair, I would probably also, we can put that in the show notes. And we have a code with them as well to save you 15 or 20%, I forget, but it's significant. And then also though, some people, midwives, doctors, whatever, may give you a little powder like of the herbs that can be, you know, it's like golden seal powder, which can help to dry it up and also keep it clean because they're antimicrobial. I think that's probably fine. But I always think like, okay, well, what were they doing back in the day? They were probably just watching it, and it is going to heal and be completely fine without any intervention, because that's the way that our bodies were designed, right? Like, least, like, keep it simple, stupid sort of thing, like kiss that.
Yeah.
So that's cords.
Okay, I have a question though, yes, about skin. That's not on your list because we're having a boy.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And I had a girl. Yeah. And I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
Like, are you supposed to like clean
you don't do anything. Nope. Yep. This, like, is a great question. So little ball sacks. Well, just know that little vulvas and little testicles can be so swollen at birth, and they look red and purple and huge and like what in the world? And you're like, there's something surely wrong, but it will go down in a few days. It's just from usually the pressure of coming through the canal, and a lot of blood can be shunted to that area and it will just, it'll stop. But okay. Otherwise, cleaning off testicles from poop can be really challenging. Oh, actually, this reminds me of another skin thing. So meconium is the name of that first poop that a baby takes after birth. And it's a thick black or sometimes greenish tinged, almost tar-like texture. It can be like really, really thick and hard to get off. So pro tip, when your baby's born and you've done golden hour and you're like da-da-da-da-da and you're starting to maybe think about getting them dressed or put a diaper on, put a little layer of coconut oil all over their genitals, whatever they have. And it can be really, really helpful with the wiping of meconium at when it comes. It's usually that first day, if not that second day. When it comes, it'll be a lot easier to wipe off because there's this oily layer so that it's not like you're having to push so hard on their little skin. But anyways, so yeah, testicles I find to be very difficult to clean off poop because you have to like sort of go within the grooves of the scrotum. But similarly with little girls, you have to spread those outer labia and gently wipe on the inner, you know, inner labia of the vulva because you can't just leave stool inside. Sometimes you're even like scooping a little bit. And if it's really bad, then you run their little butt underneath them. You know, their bottom with their parts underneath like a warm sink or something like that. That can be a really great way. Otherwise though, no. So penises, two routes to go with penises, right? Circumcised or uncircumcised. If we're not circumcising, you do not need to retract the foreskin. So sometimes people feel like, and I think it used to be a tenet that we need to like pull it back and clean it out. Nope, not the case. Urination will do it. And then the baby or the boy on his own accord, usually around ages 3 to 4, will retract the penis on his own. So, and good pediatricians know this as well. They're not meant to be retracting the foreskin because it can damage them. Mm-hmm. And there's a, you know, a little attachment point there. And it's like they, in their own play, will pull it back to the sensitivity that is okay for them as well. Now, what can happen sometimes is a little bit of like a red-tipped penis, so it's called ballantitis, or sometimes it's just of the foreskin too. And in that case, you could just soak them in the bath a couple times. You could even just put some Epsom salts in there, something like that. But if you think that there's something going on really bad with your son's penis, then obviously get to an ER right away. With a circumcised penis, so during the circumcision process, there's going to be a lot of healing that has to happen and changing diapers and a lot of blood, depending on how it goes. I have a lot about that in my postpartum course, which I don't really have any other resource to point towards that.
Okay. Well, we can definitely go get her postpartum course because everything you teach is so good. And I feel like you're such a wealth of knowledge. I'm putting all these in the show notes.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. The last thing I want to say about skin, though, is that something that is really common and kind of can wig people out because it looks way worse than you think it's going to look is baby acne. So baby acne is also called erythema toxicum. And that sounds bad.
I know. You know? It sounds like a weird disease.
Yeah, exactly. Erythema means redness. Toxicum. It's like, that sounds like toxic, you know, poison, bad. But it's baby acne. So I find that most babies fall into one of two categories. They either start to develop baby acne at like 2-3 weeks or at like 5-6 weeks. But it doesn't seem like there's that much of a middle ground. It's a benign process, but it can look really, really gnarly and it can get infected. We do not want to pick. I know that they look like whiteheads. You don't pick them. You don't scratch them. You don't do anything to it. You can just wipe it's usually on their face, but it can be on their chest, their back, etc. You just can wipe it off with a clean, wet washcloth once a day, or maybe twice a day if you really want to. You can try things like active skin repair or milk or tallow. I don't find that anything really seems to make that big of a difference. Active skin repair theoretically would be the probably most beneficial if we thought that there was something moving into like an infectious route. Mm-hmm. And so it will be very red. You can Google pictures of it so that you're not freaked out beforehand before this happens to your baby. And it's just they go through it, you know, and it can last a couple weeks and it will go away on its own.
Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. Sleep is so important. However, it can be hard to get good sleep, especially if you are stressed, trying to conceive, pregnant, or postpartum. This is why we love Needed's stress and relaxation support product. There are very few safe sleep supportive options for women in these seasons. And this blend is amazing because it contains three forms of magnesium, L-theanine, L-glycine, and chamomile. Just one scoop has 320 milligrams of magnesium, which is key because so many of us are deficient in this key mineral that helps with sleep and stress. The best part is it's in a powder, so you can easily mix it in with water or your favorite beverage, and it has a lovely mild flavor, which is delicious to drink alone, or you can blend it with their hydration support or immune powder, which is what I often do. Get some yourself by visiting thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Again, visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. Okay, now back to the show.
And now crying, I wanted to talk about some reasons why babies cry and some things that we can do about it as well. Just because it's, you know, as a first-time parent too, you're like, oh, what's happening? Yeah. And nobody wants their baby to cry, and it can be sad. So some reasons, not, you know, a complete list necessarily, but some reasons why babies can cry. So obviously if they are hungry or thirsty, they need comfort. They're just feeling sad. They are maybe like cold or hot, which is a common one for little newborn babies because they have a hard time with temperature regulation. But know that if they're like on your chest and they've been there, they're not cold or hot. Like they're going to be chilly. Unless you live in the jungle or something and they're sweaty. Obviously that could be the case, but otherwise, no, they're going to be okay. If they're overly tired, little newborns in the first couple weeks will just fall asleep when they're tired. But older newborns, like 5, 6, 7, 8 week olds, will need to be put to sleep usually. And crying from being overtired is a very common one at that age. Maybe they're overstimulated. So like you took them to like a store and you were pushing them in a stroller and they were looking around and they were seeing all sorts of stuff. So an easy way to keep a little newborn woomy and snuggly and less stimulated is to wear them in a carrier. And then their experience of the world is way dampened, which is how we want it, because we have to remember they're in there that fourth trimester. So they're really, for that first 3 months, almost like meant to still be in the womb, sort of. I mean, not exactly, not literally, but a little bit. Yeah. And we need to keep them, their little brains protected. Like it's just too much. The world is too much for them. They don't need to see all that stuff, you know, and hear all the sounds and the lights and the poke and prod and being talked to and da da da. Pain, obviously. So maybe they are experiencing something like reflux. It could be that they are literally spitting up and you can see it, or it could be something called silent reflux, which is where you don't see it, but it's coming up and it's like a GERD more, where it's like a gastroesophageal reflux disease, and it will burn their reflux or their esophagus as it comes up, and it can be very painful.
I have that right now during pregnancy, so I know all about it.
Yeah, that's a common one in pregnancy. So sorry.
It's okay. It'll be gone soon, and then I'll have a baby. Hopefully they don't have reflux.
Yes, hopefully your baby is not going to experience that as well. One of the things about silent reflux that can be kind of the indicator that that's what's happening is that they will sort of like tense up and like arch their back and almost maybe gasp and act like they're having a bit of a hard time breathing. And then they'll like swallow and then like cry, big cry. So it's more indicative that it's an upper stomach situation than gas. So gas is another reason why babies might cry from pain. But usually in the situation with gas, what they're doing is like kicking their legs and they seem like really uncomfortable and their face can turn like all purple and red and stuff like that. And then they're like kicking their legs and then they're crying. And that can be like a gas situation. Now colic, I was like debating, what are we going to do? I think I'm just going to have a whole episode on colic in the future at some point, because it's too much to talk about right now. So
yeah, let's do that.
Another one for pain, and I talk about this often and I know that I do, but I just think it's important, is a hair tourniquet. So a tourniquet is like when the blood supply is cut off, right? And a hair tourniquet is when one of our hairs, our adult hairs, gets wrapped around, usually it's baby's toes, fingers, or penis. So moms of little boys, you got to check this. So if there's a situation where you're with your baby and you've fed them, they're changed, like they don't, and a dirty diaper obviously can cause a baby to cry. You don't think they're overtired or overstimulated. They don't seem to be having gas or be hot and cold and all these different things. You just cannot figure out why they're crying. Strip them down naked, examine their entire body, look at all their little toes and all their little fingers, and make sure that there is not a hair wrapped around. It would be wrapped around very tightly, and their little finger, toe, or penis would be like purple on the other side of the where the hair tourniquet is. And sometimes it can be a medical emergency because you can't get the hair off. So this is actually one of those situations where it's a good idea to buy one bottle. You don't have to ever buy it again. But when you have a baby or a little child, to buy a bottle of Nair, N-A-I-R, that hair removal cream of the 90s. and you can slather up the digit or penis with Nair, and it will snap that hair within a few minutes.
Oh, wow.
So that's a little pro tip there. Okay, no. The five S's is a like a soothing technique made by – hold on. Let me give his name properly. Dr. something, something. Hold on 1 second. This is where I need Jamie.
I know.
Jamie, what's his name? Okay, it's called – it's from a book called – The Happiest Baby on the Block. Oh yeah, Harvey Karp. Okay, so a lot of people hate Harvey Karp, but you know what? The five S's really are a helpful tool for new parents who have an inconsolable baby. Mm-hmm. So they are ways to help a baby stop crying or to be calmed down, especially if they're like really worked up. One thing that can happen that I think I was not prepared for was that sometimes babies can be so upset from their hunger or their thirst that they are crying so hard they won't latch. And that's really frustrating because you're like, time out, it's right here. And they're just crying and crying. And they're like crying with your nipple in their mouth. And it's like crazy making. So you'll sometimes need to get them like totally calm and then they'll actually latch. And then they can have that uncomfortable situation abated. But anyway, so the five S's, you can look this up too, but I just was going to review them really quick. So it's putting them in a swaddle. Because babies like that feeling sometimes. Some babies don't. But maybe if it's in the situation outside of sleep, it might go better for your baby. Really, it just is like a sensory thing to feel really tight and cozy and safe.
Yeah.
Also, you can lay them on their side. So this is sort of a subsequent thing. So first, you start with swaddling. If your baby's still crying, while they're in their swaddle, you lay them on their side. So like their little ear, one of their ears is in your palm of your hand and you're holding, you know, their hip with your other hand. And now they're on their side. And then now you're shushing them in their ear. So this is the third S. So it's swaddle, side, shush. So you're going shh, shh, right next to their ear. And you're kind of swinging them gently or almost gently, like not shaking. Shaking is not the right word. We don't shake babies. But you're like bobbing their head a little bit. Like if you look at a YouTube video of the five S's, it will show you exactly how to do this. And you'll see what I mean by the head bobble. And it is really soothing and it helps so much. And then if all of these are failing, we can do using sucking. So what they mean in this situation is like use a pacifier. You could also just feed your baby or latch them, you know. But I think it's just a good tool to have. It's like if you're trying skin to skin, you're trying to nurse and it's just not really working. It's a nice – even sometimes just turn that little skin-to-skin naked baby over in your hand and turn them on their side and shush and kind of like swing them around. And that might just get them to calm down a little bit so that you can do whatever it is you're trying to do. So anyway, you guys look that up. It's a nice little tool to know. So now with diaper things, I had mentioned before, you'll want to fold in towards the baby down their diaper, like maybe one or two folds while they have their cord stump. The cord will naturally fall off between like 4 days. That would be on the early side, but it can happen up until like 2 weeks. It can take a long time. You don't pull it off. There's nothing you can do to expedite that process. You don't care. You don't want to do that. It is what it is. It will happen at some point. So during that time period though, to fold the diaper down is going to help prevent the top of that diaper and that little thin paper edge irritating this very sensitive wound that is healing underneath this like firm stump. So that's just one little diaper trick. Another one is the meconium, like, you know, put the baby, the coconut oil on their bum and all around their labia or all around their testicles and their penis, not necessarily the hole, like not over the hole, but, you know, just around so that that first meconium poop is easier to wipe off. Another thing to know is that mothers have little girls. So your little girl can have a like baby period, baby menstrual cycle. And this is from hormones in mom's milk. And well, actually it's from hormones that are sort of coming out of baby's system as she's now not no longer attached to mom and has been like cut off from progesterone, really. So it causes a period. I mean, so sometimes you're not even going to notice it. And sometimes you may notice just like a little spot of it almost look like pink discharge, or it can even be bright red blood, but it should only be a teeny tiny amount. And ideally, if we're looking at the diaper or if you even see it on their skin, it's not coming from their urethra. It's not coming from the urination. It's not like a whole diaper full of pink pee. That's not what we're talking about. It's like a spot, like a spotting situation. If we're looking at a diaper of pink pee, or we think that there is any blood coming out of their urethra, or if there's any blood coming out of your little baby boy's penis, these are emergencies. You go to the doctor. But a little period blood, totally normal, totally fine. Nothing you can do about it. It just happens. Sometimes people don't notice it. Similarly, discharge. So they can have little baby discharge, and it's usually like one or two diapers in that first like 3 week period. And then it doesn't usually happen again. It doesn't mean that they have a yeast infection. It doesn't mean anything. It just is a hormonal phenomenon and it's fine.
So crazy.
Okay. Now poop thing. So constipation is annoying and common.
Yeah. How often should a newborn be pooping?
Yeah. So a breastfed baby has a little bit of a longer window than a formula fed baby. Formula babies should poop every day, if not multiple times a day. Some breast milk fed babies will also poop multiple times a day, like 5, 6, 7 times a day. Lots.
Oh, wow. Lots.
It may not be a ton of poop each time, but it can, you know, there is like stool happening. But it can also be like, you know, 3 or 4 days. There will be information online that says that, oh, a breastfed baby cannot poop for like 7 to 10 days. I don't agree with that. I think that's way too long. There should be movement and motility happening. Sometimes they need some mechanical help with this for one reason or another. And so this little I love you massage that you do on their belly can be really helpful. So you start, you're going to basically write I, L, and U on their stomachs, starting at their lower right hip, going up to like their lower, or sort of like up towards the bottom of their right rib cage. So that's the I. So you'll do like a big sweep up, and then you start there again. You go down to that lower right hip and you go up, and then you go over across to the left rib cage now. So that's the L. And then you do it again and you start at the lower right hip. You go up to the right rib cage, over and across to the left rib cage, and then now down to the left hip. And that's the U. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So you're just going along the intestine.
U. Yes. You're going along the large intestine.
Ascending over the transverse and down the descending.
Exactly.
Colon for any of those.
For those medical people, yes.
Who know what we're talking about. But yeah, that helps to, yeah, understand.
It helps a lot. And I actually still have to do it with Sunday. I've never had a problem with my baby pooping until Sunday. And I wonder if it had to do with her laryngeal malacia and like floppy tissues and stuff. And just maybe not having quite like as robust of a peristalsis potentially in her colon. If I do that massage, she will almost guaranteed poop that day. Wow, if it's been a couple of days.
Massage for myself.
Yeah, there you go. Well, no, you can't now. You've got this big baby in the way. Your intestines are inaccessible. Put a uterus in front.
No, we do that in adults. We do massages.
And like castor oil packs and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't suggest that in like little newborns castor oil packs, but you can do a little bit of castor oil on the belly as you're like but I wouldn't do like a whole heated pack necessarily, but you can use castor oil as the carrier oil. You need something on your hand, whether it's an oil or a lotion, because you don't want to be like pushing on their skin. Mm-hmm. Anyways, or you can do it on top of their clothes, but the I love you massage can be really helpful. Now, some other poop anomalies that can happen: green poop. So as the poop is transitioning between meconium and like either breast milk or formula fed poop, which is some variations of yellow, there will be different stages, and green can be one of those stages, but should be very short-lived. It should be a day or two and not longer than that. If we continue to have green poop in a very young baby, a couple week old baby, it could be a sign of baby's not getting enough milk. Okay. Now, if milk has totally transitioned, baby has gained weight, they have had good normal yellow poops, and now milk is going back green, this can be either one of two things. There's probably more, but for sure one of two things. It could be like a hind milk, fore milk imbalance. If you have a lot of milk, if mom has a big oversupply, especially if there's froth along with that green poop. But if there's green poop and there's mucus, or if there's even yellow poop plus mucus, now we're looking at inflammation in the gut, and we're thinking to ourselves, okay, maybe this baby is reacting to something in either the formula or in mom's milk. So it could be like CMPA, which a lot of people will point their finger at, which is cow milk protein allergy, but it could be eggs, it could be gluten, it could be corn, it could be soy. There's a lot of different things. There's an Instagram account called Free to Feed. that we'll put in the show notes that is really, really great if you think that your baby is dealing with food allergies from your milk. So look at them. But I just wanted to mention some of those poop anomalies. Do you have any questions about poop?
I don't think yet. I loved the coconut oil trick for the meconium. I love the massaging. My daughter had like no problems. So this is really good because I feel like it's just nice to know that these things can happen. And just to be aware of it, because you never know what's going to happen. So for someone listening like me who hasn't had their baby yet, I feel like it's so nice to just be told the information ahead of time.
Yes.
So that it's on your mind to be like, oh, I remember Dr. Morgan saying this, and this is normal, or this isn't normal.
Right. And like what to do about it too, so that you don't always have to be running to the
pediatrician. I'll probably have more questions once my baby's born and they're pooping.
Right. And that's fine. But maybe in the back of your mind, you'll be like, wait a minute, I heard about that. Okay, where can I go back and listen or research it again or something, so that you just have some layer of knowledge about it, because it takes multiple layers. Mm-hmm. The reason why I can just spit off and rattle off this information is not only because it's my job, but because I've had it happen four times, you know, like I remember, and I've had four different experiences too, to an extent. I haven't had all of the gamut of possibility necessarily, but like Sunday did have an egg allergy to in my milk. And so there was like all this stuff that we had to do with that and blah, blah, blah. Anyway. Okay. So
amazing.
Last thing I wanted to mention was baby first aid. Mm-hmm. So there, this is not an exhaustive list, but these are just some of the more common things I think that everyone should know.
Yeah.
And I don't know why we don't just like have it be common knowledge. So
yeah.
If your baby under 1 month old, so a 4 week old or less baby, spikes a fever, you are going to the ER right away. You are not passing go. You are not collecting $200. You're not calling the pediatrician. You are going to the emergency room. Now, a fever in a newborn is 100.4 or above rectally. So let's just say you're like, my baby's like fussy and they kind of feel warm. And you do something like an armpit temperature, or you have a little temporal one or an ear one or something. And you're like, wait a minute, what? And you actually think they may have a fever. Best thing to do, get one of those little just regular under the tongue thermometers, but you're going to use it rectally. You put a little bit of coconut oil on there. You point it up towards their belly button. You go insert it very gently and slowly. You make sure it's not too cold, and you get a really accurate temperature. If that temperature is above 100.4, you are going to the emergency room. Now, if your baby is between 2 and 3 months old, so if they are 2 months or they are 3 months and we get 100.4 rectally, you can call the pediatrician first and talk with them and get their advice. They may have the option for you to come in and they can kind of like do a full assessment, or if you're not getting a hold of them, it's a weekend, et cetera, you're going to the ER. The reason why there's this delineation is because of the risk. So the risk is that we're worried about is meningitis. It could be viral. It could be bacterial. We very much are going to hope that it's a viral meningitis, because a bacterial meningitis in babies under 3 months, especially babies under 1 month, has an extremely high fatality rate. And that is terrifying and horrible. Mm-hmm. And so you're not messing around. I know you crunchy moms, you're going to be like, we're going to just support the fever. No, we do not support the fever in a baby that is this young. It is just not wise. It's not, nobody says that this is a good idea. I really, really strongly stand by that. This could be life or death for your child, and no one is going to be like, oh, well, good thing that you gave him homeopathic. It's like, no, we don't do that. Like we do that later. Sure. And I love supporting higher fevers with homeopathy. Honestly, like, I mean, my son is like a 103, 104 guy, not anymore, but when he was a younger kid, that was his fever expression. And he responded beautifully to homeopathy, but he was older. He was like 2, 3, 4. And so it wasn't a newborn baby. Newborn babies, we don't do that. We go to the ER. They're most likely going to be getting some pretty heavy intensive testing, usually including a spinal tap. And it is a good idea. And if we need to give them IV antibiotics to save their life, we do that. You know, this is, I just want to like, I'm speaking to the crowd that really hates this idea of medicine, and I understand, and it is life-saving. So just know that. Okay. So we already spoke about hair tourniquet. I have it written down here again, but I wanted to say it again. Blood and pee or poop is sometimes not necessarily, well, blood and poop is like, if it's like a little spot, this could be food allergy related. If it is blood and pee, we're looking at potential UTI. So that could be in the bladder or it could be in the kidneys. We're really hoping it's not in the kidneys, but it could be. And we need to be calling the pediatrician for sure, no matter what. Blood in the poop, if it's a tiny speck, is going to be much less of an emergency situation than blood in urine. Mm-hmm. Okay, now lethargy. This is different from like a tired, sleepy newborn baby that is just a little bit hard to rouse to nurse. It's like your baby is acting abnormal from what their normal affect is. and you're like, this is odd. What is going on? Whether they have a fever or not, lethargy in a baby, a very young one, needs to be addressed.
And can you explain what lethargy is to those who are not of the medical persuasion?
Floppy, non really responsive, like just sleepy all the time and kind of just not really like moving around when maybe they'd normally be kind of like kicking their legs or making sounds or doing things. They're just not acting like themselves and they're very, very tired. It's unusual fatigue. And it's a sign that their body's working really hard and they probably need to be assessed to make sure that it's nothing that we need medication for or other intervention. Okay, rib retractions. So it's a good idea at some point when you have your baby and everything is set and settled, you don't need to do it right away, but like after a couple of weeks, take a video of your baby just like breathing normally with no shirt on. You're taking a video of their naked chest and ribs and belly and just save it in your phone in like a favorite folder or something like that so it's easily accessible. And then in the situation where you maybe think something weird is happening with their breathing, you can compare and contrast it to that video of normal breathing. This is important because rib retractions or the pit of your throat, like right where your collarbones meet, if you're seeing that little dipped spot kind of go in and out, if you're seeing their nostrils flare, if they're obviously getting any kind of a bluish tint or a duskiness, like where it kind of turns a little like gray or purple around their lips, these are all signs of respiratory distress. And RSV is probably the biggest common cause of that in little newborns, and they would need to be assessed and get some help in that situation. So just know that that is a thing. If their ribs, the skin in between their ribs sinks in with every inhale, that those are called respiratory accessory muscles. They are not meant to do that. They are sort of a backup plan. But what it is showing you is that their body is working really, really hard to just take a breath. And that's not a good.
Right.
So, okay. Also another one, no urination. So like hours of no wet diaper. That's not good. We need to go to the doctor. And then another one is about the fontanelle. So the soft spot on the top of their head. There's a couple different fontanelles, but really the only ones that parents need to know about is the one that's right on the very top of the head. And it's about the size of like a can be between like a dime and a nickel usually. And as I get older, it can maybe be the size of a quarter, but it's probably not going to be. But it should be relatively just flat. It can be hard to see in a baby that has a lot of hair. Sometimes it can be a little bit sunken, just a teensy bit where you can see it and you can sort of see the bulging lines of the other bones of the head. And that's common in like those little tiny newborns in the first couple of weeks. But it should not be bulging. There should not be like a puff up like little bulge happening right at the fontanelle, and it shouldn't be really, really noticeably sunken. These are two warning signs that something is going on with your baby. It could be dehydration, but it also could be like water on the brain or, you know, something that needs medical attention for sure. So the fontanelle can be kind of a indicator of something going on with your baby. So anyway, that's all I have. I just wanted to follow up and this is all I
that's
have.
That's amazing. That's all I have. This is the course that you would take in, like beyond medical school.
Oh my God. No. I just don't ever know when to stop.
I know. I don't either. That's how I am with everything. It's 100% or nothing. You can't get anything in between, but it's amazing because this is such an amazing resource. I'm like soaked all of this up and I'm probably going to listen to these two episodes before my baby comes again to just remind me of everything because it's a lot to soak up. So
yes,
anyone who is listening, especially if you're not in this exact season, but you know someone who's pregnant or you know of someone who maybe just had a baby, like send them these episodes because there is no way that your pediatrician is going to sit down with you for 2 hours and explain everything that you need to know. And I think it's just amazing. So thank you for that. And definitely check out all of the resources that Dr. Morgan has, her pregnancy call, her postpartum course, her mastitis resources. Like you have so many amazing resources for people.
Thank you.
So definitely check that out.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's fun. I do enjoy talking about it. And it does make me realize like, sometimes I think to myself, okay, you have to, and I know you have this problem too. I have to pick just like one or two or three populations, right? Like I can't pick all of them, but I do really love talking about kids and children.
I know, and you're so good at it. And it's so needed because I feel like I can name on less than one hand the people who know the knowledge that you guys know and like this natural, pediatrician space that merges medicine and natural stuff. I mean, it's just, super rare. So,
well, thank you. Yay for that. Okay, yeah. So if you're listening to this and you have not listened to part one, just go back to the most recent episode before this and you can check out part one. It will, a lot of things will, it's like required.
Yeah.
Because this is not complete information. Yeah. Between the two
you
of them.
You're not going to pass the grade of the test that's coming to you. Yeah. You know,
exactly. Okay. Well, thank you. Bye guys.
Bye. Before you go, there's one last thing. Did you know that we have a swag store now? The Healthy as a Mother store, where we sell amazing merchandise that is fun to wear. We have shirts and hats and sweatshirts. We have drinkware, bags, journals, all of the things that are healthy as a mother or related to motherhood in general. We would love if you could support our podcast by checking out our store. We love doing what we do, and it's really helpful to get the support and also to spread the word and share our amazing brand with the world. And you get some really cool, awesome stuff. One of my favorites is the crop sweatshirt and one of our glasses that we sell that says Healthy as a Mother. I just think it's so great. So head to www.healthyasamother.com/store to check out what we have. Again, that is healthyasamother.com/store. And we are absolutely open to feedback. If there's something you would like to see that is not at the store, we can make a lot of different things there. So head over there, check it out, and we would love to see you sporting some Healthy as a Mother gear. And if you take a picture of yourself on Instagram, definitely tag Dr. Morgan and I, and we will be sure to share. Again, that is healthyasamother.com/store to check out our merchandise.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.